Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you for joining us. Our show today, Mind-Body Medicine, how to quickly improve your health. The understanding of mind-body medicine dates back to ancient times. Unfortunately, Western medicine has largely ignored the significance of its value. Common sense tells us that mental and emotional well-being have a direct influence over our physical health. Today, on the Natural Health 365 podcast, we'll talk about how each and every one of us can dramatically improve the quality of our life by taking greater control over our thoughts, actions, habits, and emotional responses to almost every situation imaginable. Think about the alternative. As Albert Einstein once said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Today, we'll dive deep into the idea of living a supernatural life, how to greatly reduce the negative effects of stress, plus we'll reveal several great insights about the value of meditation. Before we meet our very special guests, I'd like to thank our sponsor, LiveOn Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit liveonlabs.com. That's LiveOnLabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming Dr. Joe Dispenza to our show. Dr. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm very happy to be with you.
Dr. Joe, let's just jump right into it because I mentioned something earlier on that may sound a bit odd to many people out there, but what does it exactly mean to become supernatural?
Well, I think that most people, Jonathan, spend the majority of their lives waiting for something outside of them, some person, some thing, some pill, to change how they're functioning inside of them, to change even how they feel inside of them. And when we put all our attention on our outer world and we're relying on things in our outer world to change our inner state, we become dependent and conditioned to need something outside of us to change our inner state. And becoming supernatural is about changing your inner state and beginning to see the effects that it produces not only in your body, but in your life as well. So when you're reacting to someone or something in your outer world and you're saying, I'm feeling this way or I'm thinking this way or I am this way because of this problem, this condition, this news broadcast, the traffic, whatever, what we're really saying is that we're victims to our lives when our outer world is really regulating and affecting our inner world. But when our inner world begins to produce effects in our outer world, I think we move from being victims of our lives to being creators of our lives. And Becoming Supernatural is really a book that I've been wanting to write for a long time because common people are doing the uncommon. They're not relying on things outside of them to heal their bodies. They're healing themselves from cancer and rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and diabetes and MS and chronic pain and anxiety and depression and rare genetic disorders that medical science have no solution for, endocrine conditions, just by changing how they think, how they act, and how they feel. People are having opportunities where they're creating new jobs, new relationships, new careers, wonderful, wonderful new lives. They're having mystical experiences that transcend language to the degree that they can never go back to being the same person again. And they look just like you and I. They're not a mystic. They're not a saint. They're not a yogi. They're not a Buddhist monk. They're not an academic. They're not a scholar. They're a common person just like you and I. And I think that if you give people sound scientific information, and science has become the contemporary language of mysticism, science demystifies the mystical. And you can combine a little quantum physics with a little neuroscience, with a little neuroendocrinology, with a little psychoneuroimmunology, a little epigenetics. All of those sciences point the finger at possibility. And if you can build a model of understanding where people can reason that they can apply this information to their lives, once they understand what they're doing and why, the how gets easier. So I wrote the book because we've done extensive measurements over the last 5 years in quantifyingly measuring people's internal changes. And they are literally doing supernatural things. And I think that people need to hear it. And when they hear it and they see the evidence and they see the scans and they see the research of what's possible, all of a sudden they're going to start believing in themselves more. And when you believe in yourself, I think you believe in possibility.
Yeah, Dr. Joe, you do an amazing job turning people on to these ideas. And that's what we're going to get into right now, is what you've actually discovered and really scientifically studying, I should say, all of that you've been just talking about. You know, my background, Dr. Joe, is in athletic training and high-performance athletes, and I often had a lot of opportunities to talk to kids. And as you were talking just now, I was, you know, found it always very interesting to just simply explain to kids, you need to understand what the high performers do. It's like two people in the world, and I think it kind of sums up what you were saying. And the way I described it to the kids were, most of the people believe things when they see it, right? Like, you're going to be a champion. Yeah. When I win the trophy, that's when I'll really feel like I'm a champion. But I said, you kids have got it all wrong, because most of the high performers actually see it when they believe it first, meaning they didn't even get the trophy yet, but they feel like that, all the sensations and what it's like to be a champion, they really believe it truly deep down in their core first, and then they see the physical reality happen. And really, high performance athletes know this. It's really taught me a lot. I'm sure it's what you would agree with as well. But just talk about it, Dr. Joe. What are some of the things that you've found in studying your group of students?
Well, we've done, Jonathan, over 8,500 brain scans in 19 advanced workshops that we've done around the world. And an advanced workshop is really an opportunity for people to retreat from their lives for about 4.5 days. And I'd like to get some quantitative measurements before they start. So let's measure your brain. Let's measure how it functions. Let's put you through 4 days, 4.5 days of training, and let's measure your brain after 4.5 days. I want to see that the changes are not just in your mind, but they're in your brain. So when we see people heal from Parkinson's disease or from traumatic brain injuries or from anxiety or from depression, we can say to them, yeah, there's been a very significant change in your brain. We've measured people's brains during the process of change in an internal meditation. And I wanted to begin to understand what happens in the inner workings of a person's mind when they're crossing that river of change. What are the things that allow them to get better at what they do? And so we have seen more energy in the brain. We've seen more coherence in the brain. We've seen more orderliness in how the brain functions. We've seen areas that are working too hard or not working enough begin to balance out and move back into high-functioning super states. We've measured heart rate variability. When you feel angry, when you feel resentful, when you feel impatient, when you feel vigilant, your heart beats in a very arrhythmic, disorderly fashion. Turns out when you feel gratitude and kindness and care and appreciation and thankfulness and a love for life, your heart begins to beat more coherent and orderly. So we wanted to teach people how to regulate internal states to be able to sustain heart coherence for an extended period of time, not just think positively, but to really produce a physiological measurement where they could say, I can do this and it's a skill. When the brain becomes more coherent, you're more coherent. When the brain functions better, you function better. So we know that a clear intention and elevated emotion not only begins to change a person's biology, but it begins to change their energy that they actually emit. So we measure the energy around people's bodies. We've measured their autonomic function of their energy systems of their body. We've measured the energy of the room. And of course, when people are doing the work and the energy they emit begins to become more enhanced, that energy begins to interfere or begin to interact with the person's next to them energy, and all of a sudden those waves come together, and get enough people doing this, the energy in the room goes up. And if the energy in the room goes up, there's available energy for healing. There's more energy to create a new future. There's more energy to have a mystical experience. And so we've measured neurotransmitters. Why are people functioning better? Let's look at their neuroendocrinology. We've seen melatonin levels and oxytocin levels and some of the important neurotransmitters that make us feel good, make us feel more loved, more elevated. We've measured immune response and cortisol levels, and we've taught our students how to lower their cortisol levels and enhance their immune function by 50% in 4 days. We've measured gene expression, 7,500 different genes. We found that 35 randomly selected people could literally signal the gene to reduce cancer growth in tumors, to signal the gene to activate neurogenesis, the growth of new neurons in response to learning and novel experiences, to stimulate the gene or activate the gene for stem cell growth, to actually go to damaged tissues and aging tissues and repair them. The gene for oxidative stress is upregulated. The gene for the cellular structure is improved in just in 4 days. So we know we're not doomed by our genes any longer, and that we're not hardwired to be a certain way for the rest of our lives, that we're marvels of adaptability and change. And our latest research now, we're measuring telomeres to determine if people can reverse their biological age. And I think when people see the evidence and they look to see it's undeniable and they're doing it, and we're doing it in 4 days, imagine if you were actively doing it for 2 weeks or a month, what could happen then?
Oh, it's absolutely incredible, Dr. Joe. I mean, you're talking to a lot of people out there who are concerned about healing from all kinds of health issues like cancer and heart disease, autoimmune disorders, you name it. But it's so important. We've often said on our programs how it's important not to be so upset mentally, emotionally, before eating food. Now, I know some people who are new to this information, it sounds really bizarre, but it's so real what you're saying in terms of our ability to actually properly digest our food, to absorb nutrients, that our thoughts and our feelings are actually connected to these physical chemicals in our body. And it's so easy to see that a very stressed out person is going to literally feel sicker than someone who feels much more at peace with themselves and the world around them. So can you talk a little bit more about the study that you did? I believe it was in 2016 with cortisol, the stress hormone, and IgA, the body's natural immune system marker.
Sure. I mean, living in stress is living in survival. And living in stress is when your body and brain are knocked out of homeostasis. And homeostasis is balance and order. So the moment you perceive some threat in your external environment, real or imagined, you notice there's some danger, you lose control of an outcome, you can't predict what's going to happen, or you have the perception that things are going to get worse, you turn on a primitive nervous system called your fight or flight nervous system, and now you have to mobilize enormous amounts of the body's resources and energy for some threat in your outer world. And if you're being chased by a predator, you're not going to use 50% of your energy. You're all in. You're going to use 100%. Now, that's very adaptive if you have to outrun the predator, or if you have to hide, or you have to fight with the predator, because that's what that system is for in survival. But what if it's not a predator that's hanging outside the cave? What if it's your coworker in the cubicle right next to you, and you have resentment and anger towards them, and you're doing that every single day in your life? Well, if you're turning on that stress response and you can't turn it off, now you're headed for disease, because no organism in nature can live in emergency mode for an extended period of time, because you're mobilizing all this energy for some threat in your outer environment. You have very little energy for your inner environment for growth and repair. You have no energy for long-term building projects. So as cortisol levels go up, the stress hormones go up, it begins to suppress immune function, because you're mobilizing this energy for some threat and doing battle in your outer world. There's no homeland security, and all of a sudden, diseases can begin to manifest. So when you're in that fight or flight response, it's not a time to think. It's not a time to make babies. It's not a time to digest. It's not a time to open your heart. It's a time to run, fight, or hide. So people get switched on to the, like, intoxicated by these chemicals because it arouses the brain and body. And over time, they start to become addicted to the very chemicals of stress. So then it's a scientific fact that the long-term effects of the hormones of stress downregulate genes and create disease. But we can turn on the stress response just by thinking about our problems. So that means then that thoughts could make us sick. So if it's possible that our thoughts could make us sick, is it possible that our thoughts could make us well? So we took 120 people, and we randomly selected them. We measured their cortisol levels, and we measured a chemical called IgA, immunoglobulin A. It's your body's primary defense against bacteria and viruses. It's better than any flu shot. So as cortisol levels go up, your IgA levels go down because by the very mechanism of what we talked about, there's no energy for immune function because we're tapping all the energy for survival. So we said, okay, the emotions that we feel when we're in stress have everything to do with fear, worry, anxiety, guilt, shame, pain, suffering, anger, aggression, competition, jealousy, envy, insecurity. They're all created by the hormones of stress. So let's trade those emotions for some heart-centered emotions. Let's ask people for 10 minutes a day, three times a day, to connect to the emotion of gratitude, thankfulness, appreciation. And let's measure their heart when they're doing that to make sure that they're producing some type of heart coherence. Three times a day for 4 days. At the end of 4 days, we remeasure cortisol levels and IgA levels. Cortisol levels go down a little under 20%. IgA levels go up almost 50%, 49.5%. Now, if a pharmaceutical company found a drug that could strengthen your immune system by 50%, it would be on every television commercial, and yet our immune system is the greatest pharmacist in the world. So now let's talk about diet. You could eat the most organic, healthy, food combined, properly grown food in the right combinations. But if you're living in that constant state of stress, there's no energy to digest because it's not a time to digest. It's a time to run, fight, and hide. So when people are functioning in this fight or flight state and they're eating, for the most part, they're not in the proper state to even break down their food. And this is why people develop everything from acid reflux to indigestion to diverticulitis to all the other digestive disturbances because they haven't switched out of that nervous system. So we teach people then how to begin to notice the difference between when they're in that state of emergency and when they're in that state of balance. And we want our students to be able to regulate internal states independent of the conditions in their external environment. And I think that's when we begin to master our environment.
And of course, a lot of people hear about genetics, genetics, genetics. It's all about that, nothing else. Of course, a lot of the people listening to this program know that that's completely not true. But we're going to get a bit more information from Dr. Joe about gene regulation, how we can manipulate things probably a bit more than we ever imagined before. We're going to talk about this whole value of the present moment, what it means to Dr. Joe, and meditation. We're going to get into that as well, the four different types of meditation, plus a whole lot more. But first, I just want to thank our sponsor, Live On Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit liveonlabs.com. That's LIVONLABS.com. So, Dr. Joe, can you talk a little bit about your gene regulation study that you did in 2017?
Sure. Let's talk about what genes are, just so that people can understand. Your body's a protein-producing machine. And it's a protein-producing machine, and muscle cells, every cell in your body makes a protein. Muscle cells make muscle proteins called actin and myosin. Your immune cells make immune proteins called antibodies and immunoglobulins. Your stomach cells make stomach proteins called enzymes. Your glands make proteins called hormones. So then every cell in your body makes a protein, and proteins are responsible for the structure and the function of your body. So we could say that the expression of proteins is the expression of life. Now, in order for a cell to make a protein, a gene has to be regulated. So science used to say that genes create disease. Well, less than 5%, more like 1% of the people on the planet are born with a genetic condition. The other 99 to 95% are created by lifestyle or behavior. So it means then you can have two identical twins that share the same genome. One dies at 58 and the other one dies at 82. Same genes, just different expression of the gene. So then they realized, science realized that it wasn't the genes that create disease. It's the environment that signals the gene that creates disease, okay? But we're not just talking about the outer environment that you perceive in your world, although that is it. But we're talking about as well the outer environment of the cell, which is the inner environment of your body. So now think about this. If the environment signals the gene, and it does, and the end product of an experience in your environment is called an emotion, it means then that when you emotionally react to the conditions in your environment, you're signaling certain genes. And if you keep reacting the same way to the same conditions, if you keep signaling that same gene over and over again, you begin to wear that gene out and it begins to make a cheaper protein. Like taking a fax of a fax of a fax, the copy begins to break down. And so we start to express proteins in different ways, and all of a sudden the body begins to break down. So genes are like Christmas tree lights. They turn on or they turn off. And when they turn on, we call that upregulating, and it makes a better protein. When the gene turns off, it's called downregulating, and it starts making a cheaper protein. So then, if you keep thinking the same thoughts, making the same choices, demonstrating the same behaviors, creating the same experiences, and living by the same emotions, you're keeping the same genes on and the same genes off, and you're headed for a genetic destiny. If you keep living by the same emotion every single day, your body as the unconscious mind is believing it's in the same environmental experience over and over again, because the emotion is the end product of the experience. So if a person is living in guilt their entire life, no new information is coming into the body because the person is in the constant state of that emotion, which means they're in the past. So then I said, okay, let's measure some genes. Let's randomly select 35 people. Let's measure 7,500 different gene regulations, and let's find out if we get people to think differently, to make different choices, to do different things, to create new experiences and to feel new emotions. And we do it for 4 days, and we measure their gene expression before and their gene expression after. Will there be common genes amongst those 35 people that are regulated consistently? So we measure their gene expression before. We brought them into an advanced workshop. We had them thinking differently, doing different things, feeling different emotions, making different choices, creating different experiences. And at the end of just 4 days, that's 4 days, all those genes that I mentioned earlier were upregulated, which means then they were making new proteins, and those proteins were literally changing their biology. So then it proves then that when we begin to change our personality, and our personality is made up of how we think, how we act, and how we feel, and our personality creates our personal reality. So if you want to change your personal reality, you want to change your life, you have to change your personality, which means you're going to have to start thinking about what you've been thinking about and change it. Become aware of your unconscious habits and behaviors and modify them. And then look at certain emotions that keep you connected to the past and decide, do these emotions belong in my future? And I think that most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it doesn't work. We literally have to become someone else. So if we're thinking differently, if we're acting differently, if we're feeling differently, we're creating new experiences, our biology should be reflected in some measure or some change, because we're beginning to cause new information to enter our brain and bodies, and our neurocircuitry should change, our hormones should change, our chemistry should change, our gene expression should change, our health should change, because the expression of proteins is the expression of life. And all of a sudden, genes start making more healthy proteins. And it's not uncommon when we see people's tumors begin to diminish in our work. We now can say, oh, that's probably the same gene that was stimulated in our study that showed that in 4 days, cancer cells, cancer tumors would literally be diminished by when that gene is expressed. So it's evidence of what's possible for us.
Dr. Joe, I'm sure a lot of people will say, okay, fine, Dr. Joe. Okay, Jonathan, I got it. I'll try this out for 4 weeks and see if it works. But I would venture to say that if you go with that kind of attitude, maybe even on the surface doing things that are a bit different in your life, that it's probably going to get a diminished outcome. I know a lot of what you talked about, Dr. Joe, comes with being very precise, very conscious, very deliberate, very consistent, and committed to being a different person. So I know you've done a lot of tests, as you've just sort of described already, and you've done meditation and you've done workshops to influence people. Talk a little bit more about what you discovered through all of this work.
Well, I can tell you without a doubt, that you and I are at our absolute best when we get beyond ourselves. Now I know that to be the truth. And so then I think most people spend the majority of their lives trying to have some type of body, somebody, to be someone, to own some things, to live somewhere, and to have some time. And I think that becomes our identity after a certain period of time, and our identity becomes very hardwired. It becomes memorized. It's a set of automatic behaviors, unconscious thoughts, automatic programs of emotional reactions, and unconscious beliefs and perceptions that function behind our awareness. So then, how do we begin to make changes in those subconscious systems? And the model we use is meditation, because when you close your eyes and you disconnect from your outer world, when you sit your body down and you're not eating anything or smelling anything or tasting anything or feeling anything because you're not experiencing anything, and you're not thinking about your schedule of where you have to go or where you just were or what happened yesterday, and you find the present moment, now your inner world starts to become more real than your outer world. And so can you begin to change the brain and body by thought alone? And the answer is yes, but you have to become thought alone. So then when you teach people how to take their attention off their body and go from somebody to nobody, to take their attention off the people in their life and to go from someone to no one, take your attention off the things you own, your phone, your car, your computer, and go from something to nothing, from somewhere to nowhere, from some time to no time, that's the moment you become pure consciousness. And the moment you become pure consciousness and you're no longer identifying as a body in space and time, you begin to connect to a field of information called the unified field or the quantum field. And that invisible field of energy and information exists beyond our senses. And the only way that we can experience it is with our awareness. And so when you teach people how to get beyond themselves and they do it properly, they fall into this present moment state where they feel connected to something greater. And now the brain starts to get more coherent. We've seen that over and over again. In fact, we can predict when it's going to happen, and we can teach people how to do it and do it repeatedly until it's a skill. The heart becomes more coherent. We've seen that numerous times. There's more energy in the brain, and I'm not talking about just a little bit more energy. I'm talking about 200 standard deviations above normal. Now, most people fall within 3 standard deviations above and below normal. That makes up 99.7% of the population. We're talking about 200 to 300 standard deviations outside of normal. The brain has an enormous amount of energy now, and that energy, that arousal, is not coming from anything in the outer world. It's coming from our inner world, and we're connecting to something really, really profound. And so we now know how to teach that. We know that it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter if you're in shape or out of shape. It doesn't matter if you've meditated before. It doesn't matter if you're sick or you're healthy. It doesn't matter if you eat a vegetarian diet or not. It doesn't matter what sexual preference you are. It doesn't matter what skin color you are. None of that matters. I think now we're starting to see it happen in all people, and that's when all of a sudden we're starting to really teach how anybody can become empowered.
So Dr. Joe, just really quick, maybe in a nutshell, for those who need to hear it again, talk about what the present moment really means to you. And then, of course, get into those 4 different types of meditation that you like to teach.
Well, there's so much talk about being in the present moment, and we've done numerous amount of studies, because when you become nobody, no one, no thing, nowhere, and no time, and you become pure consciousness, and you take your attention off of everything material and physical, off of everything that's known, you go from the known to the unknown, and all of a sudden, as you become pure consciousness, you begin to align with that singularity, that field of information called the unified field, that is an intelligence, that is a consciousness. And now it's always present, and now you're present, more conscious and connected to it. So we see when this occurs that there is a profound change in the person. They no longer feel separate. They feel more connected. Now, the antithesis is the challenge, because your brain is a record of the past. So that means that all the memories of all the things and people at certain times and places are etched in the neural architecture of your brain. You wake up in the morning and you start thinking about your problems that are connected to certain people and certain things at certain times and places. You're thinking in the past. And if those memories create an emotion, because emotions are the end product of memories or experiences, all of a sudden when you start feeling unhappy or you start feeling guilty, now your brain and body are completely in the past. And if how you think and how you feel creates your state of being, most people's entire state of being is in the past. So they start their day, for the most part, in the past. So if you can't think greater than how you feel, our feelings and emotions are the end product of experience, and your feelings are driving your thoughts, and feelings have become the means of thinking, then by very definition, you're thinking in the past. So if you believe that your thoughts have something to do with your destiny and you're thinking in the past, you keep creating more of the same life. Now, the repetition of thinking and feeling and thinking conditions a person's body to become the mind. So that all of a sudden now, the person begins to live by the same emotions. Their body is their unconscious mind, is believing they're living in the same past experience 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Which means now, in order for them to change, we got to drag their body out of the past, and that's the challenge, into the present moment. So if they're addicted to certain emotions, they can say intellectually, yeah, I want to change. But when you start taking them into that unknown, if the body's been conditioned to be the mind, the body resists. So we teach people how to get beyond their emotional body. We teach them how to get beyond the hardwired programs in their brain. And by the same means, if you're waking up every morning, running through the same routine, getting up on the same side of the bed and brushing your teeth with the same hand, starting on the left side of your mouth and crossing over to the right, and you're unconscious and showering the same way and driving to work and doing the same things. If you do that over and over again, now your body's on autopilot. In fact, it's dragging you into a predictable future based on what you did in the past. We could say that your past is your future. And now you've lost your free will to a program. And so the body's programmed to repeat the past over and over again, so people's futures and their past look exactly the same and they're predictable in their life. So then when they begin to restrain those programs and work for the sweet spot of the generous present moment, every time they notice their body wanting to get up or open their eyes or think about time or whatever it is, and they have the will and the discipline to return back to the present moment, their free will is getting greater than the program. And if they want to get angry and emotional and patient, and they know that emotions are a record of the past, and they're noticing their body doing that, and they settle their body back down into the present moment again, they're telling the body it's no longer the mind, that they're the mind. And every time they do that, there's a liberation of energy. And then we start going from particle to wave, from matter to energy. And so when you're in the present moment, that is the perfect place to create from. So we don't teach people how to create until they know how to be in the present moment. Now, part two of the question, there's four types of meditations. There's a seated meditation, and we master that in our work. There's a standing meditation, there's a walking meditation, and there's a laying down meditation. Those are the types of meditations that we teach people how to do. So you have a great meditation in the living room of your house, but then you start your day, and the moment you start your day, you get caught in traffic, and you're running behind schedule, and now you're rushing. Now you're back in the program. So how do you teach people how to bridge that sitting world from the world of living? Well, the standing meditation is a way for them to connect just like they were sitting. And the next step then is for them to open their eyes and then begin to take the energy with them to teach them how to become that person. How will you walk? How will you breathe? How will you stand? How will you move? And begin to embody that personality. And if you keep practicing that over and over again, it'll become the new habit. And so people naturally begin to walk more like the person they want to be than the person they were. And our laying down meditations are a way to induce that brainwave state of theta and gamma, where they start going mystical. And so we teach all those because we want people really to be able to do it standing, sitting, laying down, and walking, and it becomes who they are.
Yeah, it makes sense. Dr. Joe, you don't want to have just this wonderful session for 5, 10, 20 or 30 minutes in the morning and then be flipping out all day. So it makes a lot of sense. We're going to be finishing up our conversation with Dr. Joe, talking about a particular way of breathing that he likes before meditation. And we're also going to finish off with a bit of a surprise, so hang in there. But one last time, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Okay, so Dr. Joe, as I just mentioned, this seems fairly important. Talk about this particular way of breathing that you like before meditation actually occurs.
Well, if 95% of who we are is a program in which we've done something so many times that the body has been conditioned to be the mind, or we're thinking certain thoughts that make us feel certain ways, and the moment we feel certain ways, those feelings drive our same thoughts, which turn on the same circuits in our brain to produce the same chemicals in our body for us to feel the same way. And if the repetition of that cycle over time conditions the body to emotionally become the mind, then we're taking thought in the form of energy and storing it in our body emotionally. That means that there's a lot of energy in the body that has to return back to the brain. So we do this very particular breath as a way to pull the mind out of the body. Now think about this. If the body is emotionally conditioned into the past, and now that energy is stored in the body, when we begin to liberate this energy, we're freeing ourselves. We're freeing ourselves from the past. And that liberation of energy begins to travel up the spine back into the brain. And when it reaches the brain, it begins to cause the body to begin to liberate energy and produce an electromagnetic field. So the same muscles that we use for intercourse, the same muscles we use for elimination, the same muscles we use in our lower abdomen and our upper abdomen to do other things, now we're using them in a way with a breath to begin to pull that energy back up into the brain. And if you do this properly, all the energy that we use to the life force we use to make a baby, all for orgasm, all the energy we use for digestion, to break food into gases, all the energy we use to run from a predator, instead of it being released out as chemistry, it's being drawn up into the brain. And when that occurs, the sympathetic nervous system switches on. And when that sympathetic nervous system switches on, that energy is thrust into the brain, and a gate at the brainstem opens up called the thalamic gate. And when that gate opens up, all of a sudden now, the brain begins to go into very high brainwave patterns called gamma brainwave patterns. Now the person is super conscious, they're super aware, and the pineal gland begins to release metabolites, sister molecules of serotonin and melatonin that fit in the same receptor site, but all of a sudden are more profoundly activated. Chemicals that cause greater levels of healing to anesthetize or to sedate the analytical mind, to create certain chemicals that are similar in hibernating animals where we lose our sex drive and our appetite, the body goes into stasis, more energy in the brain, more chemicals to create lucid, more profound mystical experiences. And so then we're activating latent systems by doing this breath to cultivate the brain for a more mystical, a more profound experience.
If people wanted to learn more about it, where can they go, Dr. Joe, just, you know, in case, you know, we don't want to leave them hanging?
Well, I've changed everything around for 2018. I'm no longer teaching the progressive workshops that we've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years in audiences. We're going to be doing week-long events. So all the information that I talk about in Becoming Supernatural, plus more, is in our progressive workshops, which are now an online course. And that's a great opportunity for people to just, in the comfort of their own home, go through a 9-week study course where they can get all the tools to learn the breath, to learn how to do a lot of the things that we've talked about. And then if they do that online course, it prepares them now for a week-long advanced workshop. I was doing four-day advanced workshops, but then I noticed that, wow, right at the end of the Saturday or Sunday, when people are having tremendous experiences and miraculous healings, that we have to send them home. So I thought it would be better to do a week-long event and go even deeper. So we have a week-long event in Spain in January, the 8th to the 14th. We're in Berlin, February 5th to 11th. Some of the other events already sold out. We're in Germany again in May as well. Santa Fe, New Mexico in February. So we just have these week-long events that I think would be a great way for people to really deepen their understanding, and that's where the magic happens, really.
And where should they go? Is there a website address you can give us?
Yeah, my website is just drjoedispenza.com, DrJoeDispenza. And there's meditations, there's resources, there's teleclasses, there's online courses, there's workplace solutions, products, books, whatever the person is interested in. It's all on the website, yeah.
Great. And Dr. Joe, just to finish up now, my last question to you, what is the Project Coherence and why did you start doing this?
We started doing Project Coherence because we took a community of 750 people in Germany, in Munich, and we had people in the front of the room wearing heart rate monitors to measure heart coherence. And we had those 750 people move into an elevated state and begin to generate a field, an energy, and begin to have the intent that the people wearing the heart rate monitors, their lives would be enriched, their bodies would be healed, their dreams would come true, and the mystical would find them. And they tuned into a certain energy, the entire group, and the people in the front of the room just received that energy. Well, when we saw the majority of those people that were wearing the heart rate monitors, we witnessed their hearts going into coherence at the exact same time, the exact same day, in the exact same meditation, we knew that there was a non-local effect that was being created, that when we change our energy and we start emitting the frequency of love and gratitude, that energy then is carrying a very specific message that would begin to influence other people's autonomic nervous system for them to move into balance and feel that emotion. So we said, okay, if it's happening in a non-local way, our students saw the results and said, let's do it for the world. So I started investigating peace gathering projects that have been done. There's been over 60 peace gathering projects and 23 peer-reviewed studies of the power of prayer and focusing on peace to lower crime, to lower violence, to increase economic growth, reduce car accidents, and all kinds of different measurements and effects when we move into these altruistic states. So we've done four events, four global experiments, Project Coherence studies. The last one, we had over 42,000 people participate in it. And my goodness, the effects were outstanding. And so if your heart moves into coherence because someone that you know is in the Project Coherence study and all of a sudden you start feeling more love, then if you're feeling that feeling, then everybody that you're relating with in your life or connected to in your life should start feeling a more measure of peace, more measure of balance, more measure of love, greater level of optimism. And I think if you get enough people doing this, that begins to change the world.
There is no doubt for everyone listening to this message, I can tell you that what Dr. Joe is talking about is so real. I've experienced it personally in my own life. I'm sure you've experienced one or two of these things, whether it's positive or negative in your life as well. Be careful what you think about for yourself and those people around you. There's no doubt, and no pun intended, Dr. Joe, you have given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for all the work you do.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.